And we're here with Dave Bowman, career and workplace strategist. He's the owner of TTG Consulting, a Lincolnshire International affiliate out there in good old California. David is an author, consultant, Fortune 500 executive, entrepreneur, educator, actor, and we'll even talk a little about the acting today. David, how are you?
Well, I'm fine, but who is this guy you're just talking about?
Well, he's supposedly a real hotshot out in California.
Well, I don't know. I don't know about hotshot. What is the definition of hotshot, I guess?
Well, you know, I've known you for a little while now, Dave, and I can tell you, you're a professional, a real act.
Well, thank you.
So,
you're most kind.
Well, we try. So, you know, it was funny. I was thinking about you when we're doing this radio show, this fun new venture I'm on. And I said, oh, I've got to get Dave Bowman on because, you know, he's been doing this for a little while. We won't go into how long.
No, please don't do that.
I won't. But tell me a little about how you got into this, you know, to this, or, you know, to this field or this project or whatever you want to call it, this company. How'd you do it?
Well, you know, Dave, it's not what we preach. You talk about outplacement and OD and human resource consulting, right?
Yes, correct.
Yeah, okay. Well, it's not what we preach. I was a corporate guy for many years, and at the same time, of course, doing the acting. But I was a corporate guy for many years. I was head of international with a company called Continental Can Company in New York City for several years. And left them when they moved up to Connecticut, came to California to do some things out here. And in the process, ended up with a business partner. We bought a restaurant, ran it, sold it. And I was sitting in a bar one day, a watering hole, I guess I better say, on a finger or so. And across the bar was a guy. And I said, gosh, I know that guy. Where do I know him from? And he was doing the same thing. So he gets off the stool and comes over and says, Wilson Sporting Goods. I said, no. How about Continental Can? Yes, that was it. Well, we got talking, and he said, what are you doing? I said, I just sold my restaurant of several years, and I said, I'm enjoying the fruits of my labor. He said, well, we could really use you in our business, my partner and I. I said, oh, really? What is your business? He said, outplacement. I said, outpatient? What are you, in healthcare? He said, no, outplacement. He went on to describe what outplacement is, that is to say, helping redundant employees find new jobs. And I said, hey, interesting idea. Well, in those days, it was kind of new to California, the whole concept. And so, long and the short of it, since I'd sold my restaurant, I joined them for a couple of years and then decided, you know, what am I doing working for somebody else? I may as well start my own, which I did, and that was some 27 years ago, and here we are today.
Well, outplacement has certainly changed. Career transition, if you want to call it, has certainly changed over those 27 years. Tell me a little about what you see today as maybe some of the trends, and if you could, Dave, it would be really helpful if you can maybe give an idea about, you know, what you think is, you know, the focus of companies today in terms of outplacement.
Well, Dave, I guess you could call it old school, new school. Years ago, when I say years ago, perhaps 7, 8 years and prior to that, outplacement was pretty heavily one-on-one. It was very face-to-face. It was very, we call here, consultant intensive. That is to say, we spend a lot of time face-to-face and one-on-one. And that tended to get people back to work much faster than what has developed in the past, well, let's say 7 to 5 years. And recently, some of the large companies in our business have gone to what they call a virtual program. That is, they have a portal, they have an online portal, and they give people a password and they say, bye-bye, here's your password to the portal, now go find yourself a job. Well, the portal may consist of some research databases and so on, but there's very little, if any, face-to-face, one-on-one. So there's no opportunity, Dave, in these virtual programs to run scenarios. In other words, gee whiz, I found a very interesting company. How should I present myself to this company? There's no opportunity to talk with anyone about how I should present myself tomorrow or next week or whenever it happens to be. how do I, you remember Pac-Man, Dave?
I do remember Pac-Man.
Well, yes, well, remember you had that little character with those I guess you call them tentacles, that were going to eat the other one, remember? Well, you had two different kinds, and what I suggest is you have the one on the bottom is the company, and the one on the top is the candidate, the person looking for a job. And they've got to meet. They've got to go together, or you don't have a job. In other words, the candidate has got to be able to understand and know what the potential employer's problems, issues, and situations are. If that candidate hasn't done the homework, has not run the scenarios as to how that candidate can help that company resolve those problems or solve those issues and so on situations, then the presentation of the interview is not as good as it should be, and the chances of getting an offer are not as great. Whereas you run those scenarios in a one-on-one situation, you have a much greater shot at really being much more effective in that interview. So I think what we found is now today in the marketplace, we found a dichotomy. There are the old school companies like yours, like mine, like our partners in Lincolnshire, and we are the old school. We're the ones that really do the face-to-face. Now, it's more expensive because, obviously, you have more time spent between people, but it works. And I have one client here in Los Angeles, big entertainment company, who did a study some while ago. They found that the one-on-one, the consultant intensive methodology, actually got their people back to work much faster than would have otherwise been the case. And as a consequence, those people pulled down much less from the unemployment from that company's unemployment insurance account in Sacramento, the state capital here. And therefore, that company in the following year had a much lower rate they had to pay into that unemployment insurance account. And the savings in unemployment insurance actually paid for the outplacement program. So, you know, it can be a very effective presentation to a chief financial officer who frequently will say, why are we doing all this touchy-feely soft stuff? You know, just let these people go and let them find their own way. Of course, HR has the other opinion, but when you give the CFO, chief financial officer, some of this information, it changes their tune, and they're much more amenable to saying, hey, okay, this is a good plan.
Well, you know, I think it's interesting that, you know, you talk about the expense of it, but the fact is, as you just brought up, it actually can save them money. It may look like that it's more. And in fact, you know, today's Lincolnshire outplacement programs that we all provide across the country have a component of the portal in terms of our career workspace portal, and which helps the individual find jobs, helps the individual be able to navigate the online web that you have to have today, but then mixes it with, you know, individual human touch where people can actually be interviewed, can actually practice interviewing and one-on-one and have all that critical one-on-one, you know, discussion that has to happen.
Yeah, I mean, you need databases such as Hoover's, Dun & Bradstreet's Hoover's, where you have 65 million companies on there. And I have to tell you, Dave, I have on so many occasions, my consultants have shown our candidates how to use this. They'll go to the jobs section on our portal, and they'll find one of the aggregators has a job, let's say, that's posted, and rather than perhaps apply online, because as you well know, you apply online and it goes to HR, and in many cases, the fourth level down in HR, certainly not
That's
the
true.
Director of HR,
That's true.
Goes fourth level down to a recruiter somewhere, and that person has very little interest in whether or not you fit that job. So it's up to some gum chewer somewhere to decide whether you should be considered. Instead, go to Hoover's and look that company up on Hoover's, you're going to find not only all of the information, or most of the information you'll ever need about that company, their finances, so what they've done, what they're about to do, their executives, and the executives' bios, and you can actually then contact the individual that would likely be the person who would hire you and send your letter, send your resume, and or whatever other materials you wanted to send to that person that has the power to hire you, and avoid all the recruiters, fourth level down recruiters in that company.
And it's so easy today to take the information from Hoover's and go to LinkedIn and check out these decision makers' profile and find out information on them that helps in terms of a connection you might have, and everything is 3 degrees of separation. You probably know somebody who knows somebody at a first or second level and can make this an easy contact. I mean, we do this all the time.
That's exactly right, Dave.
Yep. You know, it was it's funny, we're talking about Outplacer, but I was looking at your bio here, and I noticed that you were brought on by the Nightly News with Brian Williams to talk about an Outplacement movie. Is that true?
Well, did you see Up in the Air, the movie, Up in the Air?
I did see Up in the Air, yes. And, George Clooney looks a lot like somebody on the other end of this phone.
Oh, really? I wish I had his money. Gosh, wouldn't that be nice? Oh, yeah. The difficulty with that movie, though, Dave, and I'm anxious to hear your opinion. I don't think we've ever talked about this. Clooney did not do what we do. He would go into a company, fire people, and then just take off and leave. That's not what we do.
Yeah, that's exactly true. That's exactly true.
We don't actually fire the people or terminate the people. The company does that. We're in the next room, and we turn their heads around saying, hey, you're not going to starve. You're not going to die. There is a future, and here's why. This is not what Clooney did in that movie. So that was my position when NBC Nightly News came. I frequently things for NBC News and for Fox News as well, contributor to them. And when they called me to talk about that, I said, well, look, this is not what we do. It's not true outplacement. And so they came over with their cameras and basically, why not? Tell us what you do. So that was...
No, and that was exactly my point. It's not exactly the most accurate representation of what we do in terms of it, and certainly I know that. So, hey, we're talking with Dave Bowman, career and workplace strategist, and a member of the Institute of Career Certification International. He's a fellow there. This is great stuff, Dave. I appreciate you being on the show.
Sure, my pleasure. Always good to talk to you, Dave.
Hey, we try to have fun, don't we?
Yeah, we do.
All right, so one of the other things that I know you do a lot of in your organization, and certainly mine does as well, is executive coaching. And so, one of the things people think of sometimes is executive coaching is this highfalutin thing that only the most important people in the world get. And, these are things that, oh my God, if I could just get coached, but I can't. So can you dispel that myth?
Sure. It's basically a methodology to make people more productive. Essentially, it surrounds, Dave, as you well know, two different issues. One has to do with behavioral modification. Let's say somebody isn't listening, or they're being too autocratic, or they're just too direct in their communication. A whole series of whatever it might be, or sexually harassing somebody, who knows, a whole series of different issues that are not acceptable in the workplace or is impacting the productivity of a team, whatever. The company is saying, this person is awfully good at what they do, but their interpersonal skills simply are not right. So rather than terminating this person, they'll decide to hire a coach to come in and hopefully change some of those behaviors. Probably not change them intrinsically, but at least in terms of the perception of workers that behavior can be modified through awareness. And the key to this, of course, is awareness. In other words, if someone is basically intrinsically inside an autocrat, in other words, we're going to do it my way or it's the highway, or highly structured, or someone who perhaps might be just a whirling dervish of energy and has to slow down, coaching is not going to change that intrinsic behavior, that natural behavior. But through awareness of understanding what this behavior or these behaviors is creating in the workplace, by understanding and being aware of that, we can then create, if you will, another entity, create another behavior dynamic within which this individual can jump, or into which this individual can jump, if you will, when they feel that stress starting at the bottom of the pit of their stomach and starts to come up. You know, when you're in stress, Dave, you know how you feel that stress starting in the pit of your stomach, and
yeah,
it just starts
no
to
question.
Come all the way up
no
your body,
question. Yeah.
And then all of a sudden that manifests. Well, when you feel that starting, you just say, whoops, I can't do it, through awareness. Through awareness, whoops, I can't do that. I got to do this other behavior instead. And so you jump into that other, if you will, that other body, that other entity, that other behavior dynamic, and you do it differently. And instead of allowing that behavior to manifest, you just do it differently. Through an already articulated and designed behavior mechanism as an alternate. So that's really behavior modification in terms of coaching. Another area of coaching, of course, is leadership development. And frequently we'll find somebody, and I don't like the term, but it's used frequently, a techno nerd. You know?
Oh, yeah.
Somebody
yep.
who's really got that green eye shade on, and they're very good at what they do. Maybe it's biotechnology, or maybe it's computer technology, or I don't know, whatever, who's really good at that, at the details of whatever they do. And the company says, gee, this person is awfully good, let's make him or her a manager. Well, this individual hasn't got the vaguest idea how to manage a team, so they fail. And then they bring us in to teach this person some leadership techniques, management techniques, and makes them a better manager, or maybe even a senior manager who, or a senior executive who, for whatever reason, does not have some of the competencies, as we call it in HR, the competencies to lead, whether it's a financial team or an operations team or a technology team, or even the CEO of the organization, that the board may see that there are some missing competencies that this person needs to be able to properly lead. So they'll hire a coach to come in and provide the learning elements to make this person much more productive. But you know, Dave, and I'm sure you will agree with this, for coaching to work, for coaching to actually make a difference, there has to be two different elements existing, or one of the two. The person either genuinely, the coachee, if you will, genuinely wants to change.
No question. They have to have buy-in.
Yeah, got to have buy-in.
They got to.
Either genuinely wants to change or develop, or that person has to have been told by the company, either you change or there will be some consequences to your career here. One of those situations has to occur, or the person's going to say, you know, I'm too busy for this. What is all this about? Come on. And it ends up, you know, bottom of the stack every day, and nothing ever happens.
Well, I think the other part that I'd throw in is a third note is the fact that the company has to realize that this doesn't happen overnight. That this takes time. You're talking about changing somebody's modifying. Shouldn't say change. I like to use the word modifying someone's behavior, and that takes time. So you know, sometimes companies say, well, you know, you have a couple months to get this done. Well, the fact is, you may be able to make an immediate change and get somebody to do something different, but along lasting change takes time.
That's right. You can probably deal with one or maybe two issues in, let's say, a three-month period. But if you have several leadership development issues or several really consequential, if you will, behavior modification issues, it's going to take a lot longer than 3 months. I'll give you an example. I had one the other day, that assignment that came in. We call this profile a bull in a china shop. And describe it for you. This person was very direct in their communication, so much so that he was dismissing other people, particularly those that he felt were not perhaps up to snuff in terms of their capabilities. So they were very direct and in a tremendous hurry, just high energy, running all the time, never had time for anybody, never had time to listen to anybody, was very, very quick decision maker, just quick decisions, boom, 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 never thought anything, even complicated and ambiguous issues, never thought more than, you know, a couple of seconds on something, would make very, very quick decisions, very little empathy toward people. So we call him a bull in a china shop, and there were so many issues, behavioral issues, that there's no way that this person would be able to be changed or modified in 3 months.
Wouldn't happen. Well, it takes time. There's no question about it.
That's right.
Well, you know, it's funny, as I'm looking over your bio, and actually I have to confess I was looking online at some of the YouTube videos, and I don't know whether to call you Tom Selsby or John Kent, but, you know, some of the things I'm looking at, I mean, you were John Kent on General Hospital, you were Tom Selsby on Ewing Oil Accountant at Dallas. Now, yes. I know the new show is on. Have they given you a call yet to come back?
Listen, Dave, I'm waiting by the phone. I thought maybe your call was them.
No?
They haven't called me.
No, I can't imagine. Did you enjoy when you did that part of your life?
Oh, yes, I did. I very much enjoyed it. Particularly, I must say, Dallas. Dallas was perhaps the most organized show I'd ever been on. I've done tons of them. You know, General Hospital, I was on there for almost 3 years. I played a guy named John Kent, dean of the medical school there. And, you know, Murder, She Wrote, and Lou Grant,
and Chips, Dynasty even. Hey, maybe if they bring that back, you can go back on Dynasty.
Played a lawyer. And they're going to bring that back, I understand. But Dallas was so extraordinarily well organized. I could go in there, you know, let's say the call was at 10 o'clock and for makeup and wardrobe. And by the time we did that and we rehearsed and we shot, maybe I'd have 5 pages to do, and I'd be out of there in two and a half hours. I mean, any other show, it's all day, you know. It was just extremely well organized, and I have to say the cast was just wonderful. They were so friendly. If you got a minute, I'll tell you a funny story about Dallas.
Oh, sure, go ahead.
The very first time I was on the show, you know, 250 million people watch that every week, you know. And so the first time you're on it, it's a little intimidating. So I was, and they shot it, of course, on stage 25 over at the old MGM lot. At that time it was called Lorimar. Now it's Sony Pictures. But it's the same stage that they shot The Wizard of Oz on. It's the same stage they shot all the movie musicals with Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers and, I mean, so many others. You know, the ghosts in there were just, you go, whoa, you know, it's very intimidating.
Sure.
Anyway, so the first scene I was on in that show, I was standing outside the office, Bobby Ewing's office, with Victoria Principal, who played his wife Pam on the show. And Bobby was talking to his secretary about something or other, and then Pam was going to go in, and they were going to have lunch together, and then I, of course, came in, and I interrupted them. And the first time we were standing there, she sensed that I was just really nervous, and she said, "Dave, you all right?" I said, "Yeah, I'm just a little intimidated." She said, "Look, take a deep breath, and come on, let's both take a deep breath, and you'll be fine." So she did that with me, you know, as the scene was going, and then she went in, did the scene, and I came in and did the scene, and everything was just...
Oh, that's a great story.
Yeah, well, they were great people. They were just wonderful people. They would run lines with each other, and Well, it was just a great experience in Dallas. Terrific cast, terrific people, and well organized.
Well, hopefully you'll get to go on it. David, I want to thank you very much for joining us today on HR Power Hour. I appreciate you as a guest and certainly as a good friend.
My pleasure entirely, Dave.
All right. Have yourself a great day.
Thanks so much.